This Speedcast is brought to you by AF1 Racing of Austin, Texas. The best Italian motorcycles and scooters. AF1RacingAustin.com.
Okay, gearheads, we're very excited. We have a wonderful guest with us this morning. We have Doug Feehan from Corvette Racing. He's the program manager. Doug, welcome to Speed City.
Hey, John, it's always a great opportunity for us to get out there and preach the Corvette gospel. I think it's a great opportunity for us.
Well, I try to remain biased, but I will admit that I've owned a few Corvettes in my day, so I definitely have a soft spot for the Corvette Racing program. But let's jump right into it. You guys are coming to my town. Y'all are coming to Austin, Texas, and are going to be racing out here at Circuit of the Americas.
I have to tell you, you know, there's a number of places that we go during the course of the year that we do especially like, and clearly Austin, Texas is one of those places. Despite the weather, which can be a little challenging at times, you know, that we really like Dakota facility, and obviously the people and the city of Austin provide us a lot of entertainment for when we're not on track doing what we do.
Well, I want to come back to that about Austin, Texas, but I definitely want to talk about the weather. I hope you have some high-temp, melt-proof tires, because the weather forecast is now saying 97 degrees for Saturday.
Yeah, you know, we learned that the very first time we were there. And so we actually take some measures. We rent air conditioning units, two large air conditioning units, so that we can air condition our tent and working facility for our crew guys, because we know it can be just brutally, brutally hot there. As far as the on-track thing goes, we have raced in weather that's similar to that on many, many occasions, and the engineering parameters that we have set up for that compensate for it. And clearly, we try and do the best we can for the drivers as well, because the cars are air-conditioned.
You know, that's a good point about not only the tires, but the people, both from the drivers and the people back in the garages, because, I mean, it's a long race, and that temperature can affect everybody's performance. So that's an interesting point.
When we're there for 3 or 4 days, I mean, it can wear you down. Trust me when I tell you, from a mechanical standpoint, most of the factory teams have the cars figured out. And a long time ago, it became clear to me that you need to look after your people and pay as much attention to your people as you do to the mechanicals on the car, because the people are the ones that make it go. And so we reach out, whether it be Lamar or whether it be Austin, Texas, we try and do all we can to help support and make our people as comfortable and as effective as possible.
Well, you're absolutely right. The people are really the most important part of the whole conversation, and that's great that you guys take care of them that way. But let's do talk about the machinery a little bit. Obviously, with one of the most exciting brands in motorsports, or actually in automobiles, is the Corvette. And it was so exciting for us to back home to watch you guys win the 24 Hours of Le Mans with only one car, no less. So that's exciting, but I do want to talk about the difference. Obviously, you guys in racing, y'all racing lots of different types of races, but that was in the World Endurance Championship, but this is the Tudor United Sports Car. Can we talk about the differences and how things are set up differently?
Well, you know, surprisingly enough, the differences are not that great. In order to run in WEC or Le Mans, you have to be homologated by the FIA, and that's the same homologation that's accepted and required by the Tudor series. So the cars in and of themselves are virtually identical. The main difference would be, in the past, we have run different fuels. We've run the E85 for years here, you know, the ethanol-based fuel in the Tudor series. And at Le Mans, you run only a 20% ethanol content fuel, and that requires a completely different engine. So that obviously presents challenges when you're moving the cars back and forth. We did not have unique cars for Le Mans. We raced the same cars, same chassis in Le Mans as we raced stateside. So we had to have two sets of engines to do both. Now, in the off season, all the manufacturers got together along with the sanctioning bodies and agreed that it would make huge amount of sense to run a common fuel. And moving into next year, I believe we're all going to be running E20, both stateside and in Europe. But other than that, the cars are essentially the same. In our case, the cars are the same cars.
Oh, okay. Well, that's that, you know, I made some assumptions along that line, and I knew there were some fuel differences, and I think of, you know, ethanol as being one of the things that that where you can run different compression ratios and all that, but it's a completely separate engine. That I didn't realize. I was thinking maybe it was just modified somewhat to run. So,
well, when I say completely different engine, I mean it is essentially the same motor. I mean, it runs the same crankshaft, the same connecting rod, the same block, the same heads. But it does run different pistons, and it does run a different compression ratio. Obviously, we can run a higher compression ratio with the E85, which yields a little more horsepower, a little less fuel economy, by the way, but a little more power. Le Mans would love to run E85, but all the fuel storage is underground at Le Mans, and there isn't the volumetric requirements can't be met at Le Mans because obviously it takes more fuel to run E85. It's less, you know, than it does gasoline.
Yeah,
volume-wise, it takes more. Exactly.
You don't get the mileage.
And there isn't, there isn't room in the underground tanks to hold enough fuel to run for 24 hours.
Yeah, that's an interesting fact. I did not know.
Yeah, and so that's why we run E20 over there, and now we're going to be running E20 here too. I think actually over here it might be E20 or E30 designation, but it'll be essentially the same fuel.
Yeah, so it'll be obviously a lot less ethanol content than what
that's
you have.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you know, we have a lot of gearheads that listen to the show. Let's talk a little bit about the a little deeper in the mechanics of the car just a little bit. I know that you're not the race engineer, but I know you know a lot about it. So obviously it's a Corvette, so it's got a very at least somewhat similar engine to a street Corvette, right?
The engine in and of itself uses a production-based block. However, the rules require that you run 5.5 liter maximum, and our production engine is 6.2. So we've changed we've sleeved the engine, has a slightly different bore size, and the crankshaft, so obviously the piston sweep is less to get us to the 5.5 liters. So, and the head itself is not the production head, should make that clear to people, but it is a head that's available in our performance catalog, and that's the same head we've been running for years in the race world there at Le Mans and here in stateside. So those are some fundamental differences from a 6.2 liter, you know, supercharged engine that you get in the road car.
Okay, yeah. So sleeve, so a little less bore and a little less stroke on the crank. Interesting.
Yeah.
And 5.5 liters. I'm thinking you guys probably could maybe even use a little less power in certain times. I know coming out of the corners and stuff. I know that. You guys don't hurt for making power. What are they in the 600 horsepower range?
Actually, in the GT1 days, it was 600 horsepower, but in the new series, they look to control the horsepower to about the 500 horsepower level. That's essentially why we had to go to 5.5 liters. Obviously, left uncontrolled, the other manufacturers don't produce anything that could compete with the Corvette. So we've had to reduce our power output. They do that through the displacement issue and with the addition of air restrictors. So it limits the amount of combustion air available to the engine, and that's what they use to derive the 500 horsepower limit for everybody.
Okay, so those air restrictors, obviously something similar to, in theory, obviously, to like a restrictor plate, but what is it?
It has the same effect as a restrictor plate, and it's a conical device that meets certain dimensional requirements, so that they're all exactly the same. They're about a foot long, and by the time we get to the orifice, it's about the size of a half a dollar. We run through two of those.
All right, that's a cool little that's cool.
28 or 29 millimeters in diameter.
Okay, so it's cone shaped and goes down to like you said, a silver dollar. So,
Yep.
Well, that sounds like it would reduce the horsepower.
Oh, it does a very effective job of reducing the horsepower.
Well, let's talk.
It's like running a marathon breathing through a soda straw.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, because 500 horsepower out of a Corvette engine is just getting started, probably. So, yeah.
That's exactly right.
Well, let's talk about COTA specifics for this race. I mean, obviously here in Austin, we still pinch ourselves that we have this track in our backyard. Obviously one of the greatest tracks on the planet. And so what do you guys, when you think of the track here, what comes to mind?
You mean besides hot?
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a couple of things. Number one, we know that it occurs near the end of the year. Okay. So it has championship implications for everybody, which makes it important. And that's something people don't think about. You know, in our mindset, we look at the places we have to go, what the advantages that we might have at a certain facility go, what the disadvantages might be, where we are in the course of the season. So COTA has a high level of importance because it's the last, we'll call it sprint race we go to. You know, 2 hours and 40 minutes is in our world, although it's an endurance series and it's longer than most races, it's kind of a sprint race for us compared to Le Mans or Sebring or Daytona or Petit Le Mans. So, and to go to a facility of that nature, you know, Formula One facility is pretty cool. It has a very distinctive look to it, both, you know, on the horizon as you drive in and all the buildings and structures that are there. And then of course you have the race surface, which is a good surface, obviously, because it's relatively new and very, very smooth. So it's one of those deals where it has a very distinct footprint, a very distinct signature. It's dramatically different than any other place we go during the course of our race season here in North America.
Well, you know, one thing that comes to mind is how it compares different to other tracks. You know, obviously we got that long straight in the back, and I know those Corvettes are going to be going 160, 170 miles an hour, something like that. But there's also plenty of technical turns, and how much downforce do you guys get to play with, and what do you think of when you come to COTA?
Well, the downforce deal is always a balancing act. People always wonder what do we do when we go out for three or four, you know, practice sessions that are an hour long. And that's what we essentially are looking at, the balance between downforce and drag. You know, we can set the cars up for minimal amount of drag, which will increase our top speed down that back straightaway. But when you do that, you take downforce off the cars, they become increasingly more difficult, not only to turn, but to stop. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got a lot more speed that you're getting down the straightaway, but the guys have to go to the brake pedal a lot earlier to get the car slowed down to make the corner, because number one, they're not stopping as efficiently and they're not cornering as efficiently. So you're out there trying to find that perfect balance that gives you enough downforce without inducing too much drag into the car and giving the driver something that they're comfortable driving, you know, throughout the entire stint. And that therein lies the challenge. And that's what we constantly chase, because there's enough adjustability in the car that you can achieve different effects on different racetracks.
Well, yeah, I know that's always that balancing act, as you put it. You know, do you set it up for less downforce for the straights or more for the corners? But, you know, let's talk about where you guys are in the championship of the season and how these last two races, Austin being the second to last, are going to set you guys up to finish.
Well, you know, in the series, they use a formula called balance of performance, in which they attempt to equalize the performance of all the vehicles. And obviously, we've had a great deal of success. We had some success early on in the season, and we've been subject to some of that balance of performance that goes on out there. In the last several races, it's been extremely challenging for us to try and maintain. We were, you know, at one point in time leading in the Drivers' Championship, obviously leading in the Manufacturers' Championship. I think the Manufacturers' Championship is unfortunately out of reach for us at this point. But Jan and Antonio are still in the hunt. They've had a steady slide from the top spot since Daytona and Sebring. But we're hoping for a better result here than we've had at the last two races. So the handicapping that goes on, obviously, is intended to create a better event for all the fans. Unfortunately for us, it's relegated us to the back in the last few races. So we're hoping that you know, we've done some work in between that can help move us up the pack a little bit and continue that fight, see if we can't bring home a driver's championship for those two guys.
Yeah, that those balance of performance. What is it like? Added weight and And fuel capacity, it's, things like that?
It's everything. It's added weight. It's fuel capacity. You know, we talked about the air restrictor. It's air restrictor inlet size. It's front splitter length. It's rear wing position, whether it be moved to the back of the car or higher up on the car. But there's a number of elements that the sanctioning body can control to try and control your performance. So we were, up until recently this week, I think we were the heaviest car running. I think now I think Porsche's been brought into line. They had 20 kilograms added to them, which either makes them, I think that we're close in weight right now. So it's a very technical exercise, and one that's kind of in flux. I know that the sanctioning body has not been pleased with themselves in the administration of these balance of performance moves, but also in what the results have been. Obviously, it's been clear to the viewing public that we were, you know, delegated to the back of the pack, and that's not something that the sanctioning body is comfortable with. So it's a process, and all the manufacturers work with the sanctioning body to try and create a process that we think is going to build a series in which the competition is far more equal than we've seen the last few races.
I'll tell you what, that's not a job I'd want, because that's a tough job to make sure that obviously we have good, exciting racing for the fans, yeah. But that's
tough. The ultimate goal, John, is to make sure that after these balance of performance mandates have been announced, that everybody is just a little cranky about it.
That's right. Make everybody a little unhappy.
Just a little unhappy. If you have somebody who's really pleased and somebody who's really unhappy, you haven't done a very good job. If everybody leaves a little bit cranky, you know you're right on the mark.
That's a good way to do it. That's a thankless job for sure.
Oh, no question.
Well, Doug, I do a couple more questions, then I'm going to let you go. One, after the racing's done, you guys finish up on Saturday, so you've got a little time to spend in Austin if you don't have to go back immediately Saturday night or Sunday morning. Do you get to get out and enjoy Austin a little?
Well, you know, oddly enough, I don't know how that I did this, but my own personal flight isn't until Monday morning because for some reason...
Nicely done.
And it wasn't until 2 days ago I found out that our race was on Saturday, not on Sunday. I should know when our race is, what you think. But we got a lot going on. But anyway, so that's going to give me a Sunday in Austin, and I have to tell you, I'm really looking forward to that. It's a great city. Both myself and Gary Pratt are avid golfers, so we're looking at possibly taking in some golf on Sunday. So between sports and downtown dining and drinking, there's not a better place to go than Austin, Texas. I can assure you that.
Well, last question. This is one that I always ask the drivers, but I'm going to ask you, because when I asked Tommy Milner yesterday, it took all the wind out of my sails. And that is, you know, you guys get to tinker and tweak and run and race all these amazing cars. What do you drive every day? Please tell me it's not a 15-year-old SUV like Tommy Milner.
I wish I could tell you that, but you got to remember, I work for GM. and we tend to be very, very, very prudent in the administration. I drive, just because it's fun for the audience to know. I'll give you my last three vehicles.
There you go.
All right. I drove for 2 years. I drove a HHR.
Okay, cool.
Chevy HHR, but I had it chipped to 300 horsepower.
Nice.
And it was an absolutely street maniac vehicle. I love that thing. I kept that car, put more miles on the car than any vehicle I've ever had in my life.
And that's got that little turbo, turbo yeah, 4,
two
right?
Liter, yeah, 2 liter turbo intercooled 4. It was, what a great vehicle. But you know, I got to the point where normal maintenance was going to require struts and all the rest of it, and I owned the car. And rather than do that, I had a number of guys who wanted the vehicle. They were after me all the time to sell it to them. So I sold that, and I got a Sonic RS Turbo.
Cool. Which, another turbo.
Which I love. I drove that for 2 years. I'm a little vehicle person. I'm not a big fan of big cars. I'm currently driving. I got myself a new Chevy Equinox, which is about the biggest vehicle I've driven since the jalopies that I drove when I was in college. and I didn't think I was going to like it, but I've kind of really enjoyed it. It's a wonderful vehicle. It's beautiful, quiet inside, and all the things that Chevy puts on these cars is just incredible. From the, you know, from the viewing screen, the backup camera, the OnStar, all the navigation stuff that's available, the creature comforts inside this thing are just amazing, and the ride quality and handling quality. I got the 300 horsepower V6 in the thing, so it's a little hot rod in and of itself. It's surprising, but that's what I drive every day, which I know is pretty boring to sports car fans. But you got to remember, we live in Michigan too, and we have what we call four seasons. And if you don't have something that works well for 4 months, you're not getting back and forth to work or anything in your personal life either. So, you know, all-wheel drive and a big motor works for me.
Well, you saved yourself when you said you chipped it out to 300 horsepower on the HHR. So you passed muster.
Well, I had the Sonic chip too.
Okay, good. Well, Doug Fien with Corvette Racing Program Manager. Doug, thank you so much for coming on Speed City, and we'll see you here in just a few days.
I'm looking forward to it, John, and I'm hoping everybody finds the opportunity and the time to come on out and see us. You know, the beauty of sports car racing is you not only get to watch the action on the track, but we allow, unlike NASCAR, we allow people into the pit lane and to the paddock. And you can come up, touch, see, feel, take pictures, meet the crew, meet the drivers. It's a great motorsports experience. If you haven't done it, you need to get out Dakota and see what real racing's about.
Yep, that's one of the best things about this series, that you guys allow so much access to the fans. So it's great. Well, Doug, thanks a lot, buddy, and we'll see you in a few days.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm leaving tomorrow.
All right. Have a good trip.
All right, buddy.
Bye-bye.
See ya.